Chapter 25. In Oklahoma, the temperature can change abruptly from one extreme to the other. A bright sun shone in a cloudless sky, trying to lull us into thinking that winter had packed up its bags and moved on, when in actuality cold weather would be here for at least another month. Nevertheless, I opted for the comfort of my red sweatshirt over blue jeans to get me through the day. Although the sunshine looked warm and inviting, I didn't trust it. I glanced in the mirror, decided to wear my hair down instead of in a ponytail, and headed for the dining room and that cup of hot coffee I could smell. No matter how early I started my day, Mom usually had coffee made by the time I opened my eyes. She liked to begin her day with a quiet time of Bible reading and prayer. 15 minutes later, I polished off the last bite of oatmeal pancake and drained my glass of orange juice. Jethro sauntered over and rubbed against my leg. "And what are you going to do today, old friend?" I asked, getting up to pull his box of kibbles from the pantry. "You say you're going to sleep on your cushion and keep an eye on the birds? Have a good time." He arched his back, favored me with a silent meow, and tiptoed to his food dish. I shook food into Jethro's dish, then glanced at Mom. "How do you feel about going out to the acres and checking on the progress of our new house?" I asked. "That's a good idea. Maybe getting out in the countryside and fresh air will clear our minds off Eileen and you getting shot at and that old gun and Mama's first marriage. Phew, what is going on anyway?" I carried our dirty dishes to the sink, rinsed, and stacked them in the dishwasher. "It's just me, Mom. None of these disturbing things would be happening if I were still in Dallas. Maybe I'm what Grant said I am, a magnet for danger." Mom sniffed. "Oh, pshaw, I don't want to hear that. Better wear a coat, Darcy," she said, heading for the hall closet. "The sun looks nice, but I'm sure the wind is still nippy." "Yes, dear," I called in a sing-song tone. At times, my mother forgot that I had grown up long ago and still treated me like I was a child. As we hustled into my little SUV, I glimpsed a pickup truck turning the corner heading away from our house. Was it the same vehicle I had seen yesterday? Was someone watching our movements? The truck disappeared before I got a good look at it. As I drove out of town, I kept an eye on the rearview mirror for any sign of someone following. Maybe I was paranoid. If we did have a stalker in a vehicle, it couldn't be Jasper because he didn't drive. Surely the man who had shot at me wouldn't be so bold as to venture out in daylight. Grant was scouring the countryside looking for him. We left the highway and turned onto the dirt road leading to the edge of Granny Grace's acreage. As we neared the house place, I grabbed Mom's arm. "Look, they've actually gotten up part of the frame. Oh my goodness, it is starting to take shape." Mom grinned. "It sure is. I'm beginning to get excited about it." We walked around our future home, imagining what the living room, kitchen, and bedrooms would look like. I was pleased to see the openings for two fireplaces, one in the living room and another in the dining room, a plan Mom had suggested and with which I agreed. The old hand-dug well, located behind the house, had been cemented over, so Cub must have decided he was not going to find any more hidden treasure in it. The wind in the bare tree branches lifted my spirits. A cardinal sang his cheery song from a high cedar. I was reminded of an old verse I had learned as a child. A cozy cottage, snug and warm, with four strong walls to shield from harm. "I want to sit here on this rock and look at our beautiful house," Mom said, sinking down on a gray boulder. "I think my mother would be pleased that we are building out here on her land. I just wish she could see the house when it's finished." I put my arm around her. "Who is to say she won't, Mom? We really don't know how near heaven is, and I don't believe it has locked doors, so perhaps Granny Grace is free to go where she pleases." Mom looked at me in faint alarm. "Now, Darcy, don't let your imagination run away with you. I don't know if that is biblical." I ruffled her springy curls. "I'm going to walk around. I imagine all the snow and rain we've had this winter has caused the creek to rise. It's a good day for me to stretch my legs and get some exercise. Today almost feels like springtime. Although I didn't mention it to her, it was also a good time for me to listen for any unusual activity, such as the sound of someone digging. The sun seemed brighter as I recalled my earlier explorations and how Grant had found me, cowering on the ground, terrified of the ghostly webs that stopped my progress. Since that day, my heart had been singing the same refrain, "Grant Hendley loves me." "Don't go far, Darcy," Mom said. "There are lots of trees around here, and when you're out among them, they all look the same. A person could get lost." "Lost? On Granny's land?" I laughed. "I don't think so, Mom." The crisp air smelled of river and creek, and that mysterious, elusive fragrance of damp woods. I breathed deeply as I walked through a clearing where at one time Granny Grace and Grandpa George's house stood. I ambled on past that vacant house place to the old apple orchard. The trees had lost branches and the limbs twisted in strange shapes from lack of pruning. However, each spring and summer those limbs still bowed low with shiny red apples. The orchard bordered an area that had been cleared of trees a long time ago and was used as a burying ground. Early day people had no way of traveling except by horse and wagon. Funeral homes were few and far between, so there were many family burial plots or cemeteries behind churches. Granny and Grandpa and various family members were buried at Goshen Cemetery, not here. This lonely place had been deserted for many years. Briars and thickets covered the ground, a few leaning headstones pushed above tall brown grasses. When I was a young child and spent the night at Granny's, I would stare out my bedroom window at the moonlight dancing across those grave markers and shiver. Did ghosts flit above the resting places of people who died many years ago? I gazed at the cemetery until my childish imagination overpowered me. Then I would duck under the covers and feel deliciously safe from whatever evil lurked on the other side of the orchard. After Mom and I moved into our new house, I planned to have the area cleared of all the undergrowth. I would try to restore and preserve the orchard as well as the cemetery. A dead bough had fallen from a cottonwood and sunk into the soft ground. The limb had been there for quite a while from the looks of it. The branch must have landed with some force because it was deeply embedded in the earth. I tugged the limb of it until it suddenly loosened its grip on the ground, causing me to stagger backward. As I started to toss it aside, I noticed something clinging to the sharp end that had been underground. Bending closer to the object, I rolled it between my fingers. Small bits of a rotting cord crumbled onto the ground. I dropped to my knees for a closer look. The scrap appeared to be a remnant of a braided cord, frazzled ends sticking out from three thick threads twined together. Most of the color had faded long ago, but where the strands crossed over each other, I could detect a faint tint of olive or brown. Sunlight glinted on an object beside the hole created by the displaced limb. It appeared to be aluminum, an oval shape, maybe 2 inches in diameter. A few threads, similar to the ones on the end of the tree branch, clung to a hole near the edge of the oval. Perhaps the oval was a maker's label from an old piece of farm equipment. I rubbed the label against my jeans and held it up to the sunlight. Faint letters appeared through the mud. I could make out an M, R, K. I turned the aluminum piece around and breathed on it, brushing it against my pants again. With my fingers, I traced the indentations of letters stamped into the aluminum. The letter C emerged, then A, U, L, D, F, E. The small of my back felt as if a hand gripped it in an icy vise. I scrambled in the dirt for something to dig with, something more than my hands. Frantically, I grabbed the fallen branch. With the branch, I lifted debris that had lain in this spot for a very long time. Sweat trickled down my face. My breath came in short bursts. Finally, a long, narrow depression in the ground lay before me, an oblong shape that sank 5 or 6 inches lower than the surrounding graves. The limb, blown from a tree and shaped like an arrow, had landed directly in the middle of this depression. This indentation was the size and shape of a grave, but if so, this grave was unmarked by any headstone. My breath came in gasps. I could go no further. This scar in the earth was revolting to me. Fear gripped me, terror of what must lie beneath the layers of leaves. My arms and legs felt like water as I sank back on my haunches. Once more, I held the aluminum oval up to the sunlight, turning it until I could make out all the letters. The letters were faint, and parts of them had been obliterated, but after nearly 100 years, the name was still there, Markham Caldfell. The wind in the cottonwoods above me seemed to cease. Because a tree limb had plunged to the ground in this, the 21st century, I was transported back to a turbulent time of war and death and a dark secret. My chest ached. I didn't realize I was crying until I saw tears falling on the cold disk that seemed to burn my hand. I stared at this name from the past, my grandmother's past. In my hand lay the identification tag of a man who had played an unexplained part in the life of my family, the dog tag of a World War I soldier. I closed my eyes until the trees around me stopped spinning. I stumbled to my feet and sensed a presence beside me, slipping an arm around my shoulders. My eyes flew open, and I looked wildly around. The only living things I saw were the trees and a hawk riding the air currents in slow circles above me. No one was near, yet I could have sworn that for a brief instant someone stood close. I convinced myself that a lonely, deserted cemetery had created the impression of a presence beside me. Surely that was the answer to the nearness I had felt. My imagination must have been working overtime. "Oh, Granny Grace," I whispered to the wind that lifted the lifeless leaves of the cottonwood. "Oh, Granny, I think I've found the grave of your husband."